Hey, did you know that the ozone layer's getting better?
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Time Back Podcast. Like the 14th time I do it will be the time that it goes clean.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dime Back Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. I'm joined by my staff writers, Russ Steinberg.
Hi, I'm Russ.
Are we doing this
Peter
again?
Bard.
Hi, I'm Russ.
Megan Bard.
Hi, I'm Russ.
And Kevin Meacham.
I'm Kevin.
Hi, Kevin, I'm Russ.
Can we do a real one, though? Or not. I don't actually
or not.
No, that's as good as we're going to get tonight.
Tyler started.
So we literally are idiots and decided to schedule the podcast right at the end of the women's game against Texas. And so we have about 10 minutes of audio of us watching the end of it. So we'll include that. We won't, though.
No, we won't.
But we were marveling.
That'll be on our DVD season in review.
Right. Yeah. You can match it up with the video on UConnHuskyGames.com.
It's part of $5. Our Australian package.
What's your next thing?
Peter, you were just remarking about the novelty of having multiple inbounds plays.
Yes, I was.
That was a good conversation.
Do you want me to say those things again?
No.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, say those things.
We know it. The audience doesn't need to know it.
I was just impressed how at the end of the game, when Texas had fouls to give, they ran three different inbounds plays in a row on their three inbounds. So they managed to inbounds all three times. And then KLS missed both shots, so it actually didn't end up helping that much. But
it took like 10 seconds off the clock.
Yeah, I suppose.
And also, they didn't turn the ball over immediately, so that's also a good thing.
I guess when you play UConn, you kind of have to hope that like something crazy goes your way. But it was kind of weird at the end of the game they were letting so much clock go off before fouling.
Especially on that last play. You've got 15 seconds, and you lost half of them. Like, right. What are you doing? And Gabby Williams, and I love Gabby, but this is hilarious. So she's only a 71% free throw shooter, and they could have fouled her, and they did not.
Yeah, and they let her get off two passes. Let the ball go to KLS and Dangerfield after that, which was also weird.
Dangerfield was only 72, so.
I would have fouled KLS after she had just missed the last two.
Yeah, it's the gambler's fallacy.
I'd have fouled Tania Chong.
I was complaining earlier in like my, when I need to pretend like I'm concerned, even though I'm not at all, which is that they occasionally struggle against athletic teams, and they did for at least the first half of this game.
I mean, they definitely, the maybe only weakness this team has is if you get really physical with UConn, that's a problem. Not that they aren't strong, but their game is not a like slugfest. It's, beautiful backdoor cuts and perfect passes, and like when you're getting shoved around, it's hard to have that kind of synchronicity at the speed that UConn plays, which is basically how Mississippi State, that and that giant girl who could like reach around Gabby to get, steals and stuff. But
Kara
generally
Walters.
Speaking,
that was her name.
That's the only issue you're really going to face. Also, Nafisa Collier played like trash again, which is also what happened in the Mississippi State game. And I love Fisa, but like girl's been having a rough season.
Yeah, she is not. I mean, last year, I feel like, what did she shoot last year? Like 68%?
She was ridiculous. Over 65%. Yeah, it was ludicrous.
I mean, I guess it's not reasonable to expect someone to put up a preposterous field goal percentage 2 years in a row. But it really feels like Stevens has clearly surpassed her.
Stevens is Andre Drummonding her.
Stevens looks amazing. Her game, she's improved even just from the beginning of the year as far as like speed and tempo of her play, but she can do so many things on the floor. Like to have that kind of size and be able to handle the ball as well as she does, her shot's so great. Like I hope she sticks around for another year.
I don't understand why he keeps pretending she can't defend. She's
just a motivator.
Saying she's a trash defender, everyone. This person, like, he talks so much shit about all of them. But I thought that was pretty harsh. And then that play late where, the one where the ball got knocked out and we got the ball back. But, like, she's just perfect positioning, block the shot, don't commit a foul, ball stays in bounds, other team knocks it out. Like, that's perfect defense.
I'll say to your point, Megan, about they struggle with physical teams. I think it's partially because UConn just doesn't foul. So in a game where the other team's really physical and just UConn's not getting whistles, it starts to look like they're being out-muscled. Because UConn just literally does not foul anyone ever. It's
getting, you know, Katie Lou Samuelson, you know, you can push her around and throw her off her game if that's what you want to do. It's a little harder for, I think, you know, to do that to Gabby unless, you know, the girl's 6'6 and 250 pounds.
So the women basically have one game left on their schedule, right? Before the Final Four, the South Carolina game?
Before the Final Four.
They play Louisville, too. Louisville's pretty good.
They do still, out of conference?
Oh, they do.
And Louisville might be undefeated when they play, although I guess maybe not.
That's and like I will February, say, I think. Not before the Final Four, before the Elite Eight, because I do think there are more than four teams that are good enough to give UConn that game.
I'm trying to get a live report from Bardad, who has just texted me from Austin. My mom is calling. Should I just put mom on this podcast right now?
That's smart, mom. No question.
Make her read the J. Timothy's menu.
In an accent.
Hi, mom.
Thank God.
I called you by accident. I have to put you on speaker. Uncle Rick wants to hear you. Hold on.
Oh, boy.
Just tell him to subscribe on iTunes.
This is good.
Well, I'm answering the phone because we're actually recording a podcast right now. Do you want to tell the people how awesome it was at that game?
It was amazing at that game. The crowd was like louder than anything I've heard before.
How many people were there? Was it like sold out?
There were about 12,000 in a place that holds about 15,000.
But it's one of the biggest crowds they've ever had at a women's game. Blah blah blah. They aren't going to be able to get home tomorrow. Because there's supposed to be an ice storm here.
Oh, well, that's fun.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We'll call you later, honey. Finish your podcast.
All right. Bye, Mom.
Bye.
Bye, Barb Mom.
Bye.
That has to go in the podcast.
Nice, succinct, to the point. She didn't get sidetracked and start talking about God knows what.
She's given better analysis. Well,
the best thing is my uncle who chimed in there.
With exact 99%
of the time. 99% of the time he talks to us. The first thing he does is tell me the filthiest joke he's heard that week. He kind of looks like Voldemort mixed with The Rock.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Look at those teeth.
Those are some nice teeth.
He's got some pearly whites.
All right, so we're done with women's basketball now, right?
I mean, collectively?
Just for the evening. All right, let's go to men's basketball because we're on a winning streak. 3 in a row.
Woo!
Ending tomorrow's loss to Memphis.
Woo. One of those
what are the odds this gets up before Memphis?
Well, considering we're at 36 minutes and have no usable content right now, probably not great.
Can I just express my sort of befuddlement at the fact that how is it that despite all of the issues we have with Kevin Ollie's coaching, he seems to completely have UCF's number and this is not the first game that they have completely made Taco Fall just utterly irrelevant. And most teams don't seem to be doing that. And I just am puzzled, pleasantly puzzled, but puzzled.
Yeah. So I'm going to say something that's going to be very unpopular. A thing that has happened several times this year, which is that UConn has faced a big man who on paper should dominate them. Taco Fall, DeAndre Ayton, and the motherfucker from Michigan State. And UConn has actually played them all very well.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Ollie consistently, I mean, really, his game plan is, doesn't seem that common. He just doubles them with bigs, right? That's basically, tries to deny the paint.
Bigs at them.
Tries to deny entry into the paint.
Exactly what.
And then doubles them and lets Dave Enora or whatever, hack the fuck out of him if he needs to.
It's the Elton Brand defense, basically.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what it is. It's the Elton Brand defense that Jim Calhoun came up with, you know, nearly 20 years ago. But it's been effective as fuck.
Yeah, and and Ollie he uses it a lot and he uses it effectively. But it's really not bigs that are eating their lunch this year, or really ever.
No.
Remember what they did to Adrian Payne in the Elite Eight? That was fucking beautiful. I mean, there was enough good things in the last three games, I think, to feel better about the season. I don't think it really changes my overall impression of them. Although, you know, they were lacking effort and lacking a lot of execution for the last couple of games, and they've definitely seemed to correct some of those issues. I don't think they're talented enough to be particularly noteworthy this year, but credit where due, they're improved.
I think the defense has looked significantly better, which is something I expect from a Kevin Ellie team, that at some point the defense is going to figure their shit out. And to a degree, I think that that's true. I will say the one thing I did like, particularly in the last game, is Jalen Adams got a bunch of assists, and how much better and more functional the offense works when Jalen is passing the ball and other people are scoring points as well.
Yeah, there was actual movement for an off-ball movement for the first time like all year against Tulane.
Extra passes,
guys were running like a little weave to start the action, and then Jalen kind of made good decisions throughout the day. Like, it's the first time. Like, again, it's not a great offensive team. They can't really shoot, but they had a plan and they executed it as well as they could, and they beat Tulane, a decent Tulane team, by 10 points.
Yeah, so
that's all I needed to see.
I listened to this game on the radio as we were bringing New Dog home. So I didn't see any of this. I just heard Joe D. But it sounded to me like, A, UConn ran an offense for the first time ever, and B, Large Dave and Josh Carlton both had really good games. And yeah, I don't know if you guys saw anything.
I mean, Large Dave is getting some rebounds. He was getting a lot of rebounds, which was nice to see. Quint didn't really get any minutes against Tulane, which surprised me, because he'd been getting minutes. Yeah. He'd been getting progressively more minutes, and he actually looked like he might know what a basketball is in the previous game. So I was actually like, I'm not going to pretend that he's some sort of like complete player. He's still very, very raw, but he was getting a lot of rebounds. He plays with a lot of energy and activity and very vocal, and he kept Christian Vitale from punching that guy in the face. Generally speaking, I feel like he's been a net positive when he's been on the floor recently.
Part of it, though, might be that before the Tulane game, David Onora was borderline unplayable.
Yeah, like, that's true.
God awful. And Carlton couldn't stand him. Well, I say borderline because Ali did actually play him a lot more than he should have. I like Quint, and it seems like he does know what a basketball is.
At the beginning of the year, it was not at all clear he'd ever even seen a basketball before, so it was nice to see, you know, it's obviously working, and Kevin was giving him some minutes in acknowledgement of, I'm assuming, whatever was happening in practice. Like, he was setting some good screens, he was picking up the double team when he was supposed to. Like, it's not, you know, earth-shattering stuff, but it was stuff he was not doing, you know, 6 games ago.
His per 40s are 10.2 points and 11.8 rebounds.
So the last 3 games that they have won, they've taken 16, 12, and 14 threes, respectively, which is, all those are the lowest of the season except for the Arizona game, which God only knows, but
I don't think that happened.
Against Tulane, like, those shots were coming in rhythm. Like, they were not Jalen dribbling for 20
seconds. They made 7 of the 14 3-point attempts. I just think the shot selection being improved, even the UCF game too, was definitely, you know, I think that might have been the most evident place for improvement, other than ball handling, as you said.
I feel like most of the season I've been really annoyed every time Terry Leary has taken a 3-point shot, because I was like, why the fuck are you taking that shot? It was like never the right shot to take. And there were a couple last night where Jalen caught him in rhythm, and I was like, oh, yes, yes, that is the time you're supposed to take that shot. Not the other times, that time.
I went from Larrier should never take threes to Larrier should only take threes in like 3 games.
It is wild.
Yeah.
I believed before that Larrier should take threes sometimes, but then
this is really a bold statement.
Yep.
Regular shots. And currently I still believe that, because I don't go to extremes.
Larrier's at 41% now from three.
I was going to say, like, he had been kind of struggling. I think he had 5 against, like, he has a good game every 4 games.
Yeah.
Because that's how good he is, and when he's not taking shots in rhythm. But if he can be like that guy on the wing when Jalen drives, he's a very valuable player.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get him good shots, fine. The problem was, he is really not that good at getting his own shots. And he was ending up just taking really...
another guard who could create. Yeah. That sure would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice.
It looks like there's mashed potatoes that have caused us problems this year again.
Who is the in second place in 3-point percentage on the team? Anyone know?
Cobb.
Eric Cobb.
33.3.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Vitale's at 31.4.
No one else above 33?
No one's above 32. Vital's in third place at 31.4.
How is that? I really thought he was higher than that.
See, I have this very conflicting relationship with him because I love him so much of the time, but then also some of the time I want to throw things at him.
Can you tell me what he's shooting in conference games?
35.9.
Yeah, he was 2-for-6 against Wichita, 5-for-14 against Tulsa, 2-for-8 against ECU, 2-for-6 UCF, and 3-for-5 against Tulane.
Did you say 5-for-14?
Yep. The Tulsa game? Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I mean,
that
it was a double overtime game, but yeah. Yes.
It's not great. It's not great.
My other complaint about Larrier is he's really bad on defense and he doesn't get to the free throw line. Other than that, though, I'm really happy.
That's the thing. He's like probably our second best player.
And he's 43% from 2-point range.
See, great. Christian Vital makes me not mad at him because he's extremely good at getting to the free throw line and then he makes his free throw. So even when I'm mad at him, I'm not mad at him.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten to the line as much lately, but especially the beginning of the year, he was the only one who was getting to the line.
There are three, not counting Quentin, there are three players who are above 100 in offensive rating, so above average by KenPom. Vital and Adams are 1 and 2.
Whaley.
Anyone? Or they're actually 2 and 3. Anyone have a guess who number one is?
Whaley.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. He.
Pork chop.
I like me some Whaley.
He had a really good game in the ECU game, right? That was, ECU. He did really well that game, right?
Yeah, 25.
It was like after that game, his like true shooting percentage or something, or like, his like effective field goal percentage was like 80. It has since come down.
He's a really good athlete. He's been taking the jump ball, which is hilarious. But he's a
shot blocker.
It was hilarious him against Taco Fall for the jump at the beginning of the UCF game.
He's averaging something like 2.5 blocks since they started conference play, which is hysterical. But
he's a lot better than Tyler Pauly.
He's got great hands, and he's really good on the offensive glass. He gets those little putbacks in, and he's got great timing. He's got really good rebounding instincts. I am a big fan of his.
You know, I appreciate that he stays within his limits, too. You know what I mean? Like, he's not Eric Cobb trying to jump like Magic Johnson and launch corner threes. Like, he gets the ball, and he knows his job is to make a layup or give the ball to somebody better.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that.
What do we think Eric Cobb did?
I think he got in KO's face.
Same.
That's what it sounds like. Don't we know this?
It's certainly been inferred. I don't know if it's been confirmed.
I don't like to speculate.
Let me look this up. This is from the current story. The suspension stems from an exchange of words between Cobb and Kevin Ollie when Cobb was removed from the game against ECU Saturday, just before halftime.
So what do we think they were talking about? Scooters?
I mean, he should not, obviously, fight with Kevin Ollie. But he also probably should have played a lot more. You know what I mean?
Speaking of Eric Cobb.
If we're taking tone, language, and timing out of the equation, like, Cobb should get all of Large Dave's minutes.
Yeah. Speaking of Cobb,
I don't know that he should, though.
Shout out to the Hartford Current guy.
Large Dave is worse.
Large Dave is worse, no question.
Large Dave is bad, but he had a good game against Tulane.
Cobb is bad, like, thinks he's really good.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's where my Whaley appreciation comes
right.
in.
Yeah, for me, the ideal big men are Whaley and Carlton.
I like Diarra.
I like Diarra.
Well, Diarra, I guess you need at least three because they foul a lot.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what's Carlton's fouls per 40?
700.
Is it still a flight number?
8.3.
Diarra and Large Dave are racing for the record at 9.2 each.
Carlton 8.3, Cobb 5.9. Whaley 4.4, Anderson 4.1. Get your shit together.
Every time Antoine Anderson touches the ball, don't you? Is it impossible to not think you should be Tremont Waters?
God.
Anderson's averaging more fouls than points in conference play.
If Waters is on this team, how many more games does UConn win?
I think at least 4.
Then Wichita, right now or all season?
Syracuse.
So far this season.
Tulsa.
Like, what Tulsa losses do you think would be wins?
I say 2.
Tulsa's a win.
Tulsa and probably Syracuse.
I think Arizona's a win.
Probably Arizona. And maybe Auburn? Wichita.
I don't know.
Auburn, they lost by like 30.
They lost by like 30.
The three blowouts, they were not winning those
Auburn
games.
Or Arkansas. Probably not Michigan State.
Waters are really good, though. They should have gotten Waters.
Probably should have fucking paid him.
Yeah.
Called the bag man.
Probably should have just matched the offer.
UConn needs a good bag man. I think that's very clear.
You volunteered at one point.
I was going to say, why is no one taking you up on this? We will crowdsource your bagging efforts.
I'm tired of just funding a UConn blog.
Russ wants to be the money behind UConn men's basketball, not just a Dimebag.com.
I would love to.
All right, we'll start a Kickstarter for something like Russ's Kids. That's what we'll call it. Russ, you start a 501c3.
Oh, that's creepy as hell. Oh, God, that's so creepy.
No, this is good. And everyone, donate to Russ's Kids. Wink.
And Russ will pay the kids Wink. To come to UConn.
And then,
yeah, I want to make it clear that that is what Russ's Kids is about.
And we just want to say, hypothetically, Diamond Stone and Tremont Waters might be Russ's Kids.
Diamond Stone actually, would quite literally be my large adult son.
Russ will also take their SAT scores, SAT test for him.
Oh, yeah.
You could absolutely pass for Diamond Stone, Russ, no problem.
Hi, I'm Diamond Stone. So let me ask you this: how good are you guys feeling right now about the season? Has your overall perception changed at all?
I've become irrationally optimistic, which inevitably means that when we play against Villanova, I am going to be crushed inside my soul.
Well, don't look too far ahead because there's a 9 p.m. Tuesday game at Memphis.
See, here's the thing. I can talk myself through a Memphis loss because it's 9 p.m. It's at Memphis. Like, I don't know. Shit happens. Also, we might win that game. And then we're going to play Villanova. And I will not survive as a whole person any longer.
All right, Megan, let me tell you something about Memphis.
They're pretty trash.
They do not have a top 150 recruit on their team.
Do they have 6 players on scholarship at this point?
Yes, I think. But they do not have a top 150 recruit. They had, well, I was going to say they almost lost to like all of these shitty teams, but UConn did too.
I mean, didn't they lose like their entire team?
Yes.
Yes.
They did. Nobody goes to their games. Does this sound familiar to you at all?
Nobody goes to their school because it's not actually a school.
They beat Northern Kentucky by 2. They beat Mercer in double overtime.
How many Fordham players do they have on their roster?
1.
I don't know, maybe a couple.
See, here's
the
problem.
If it's more than 1, I like our chances.
I feel like we're probably going to beat Memphis. Like that, we'll probably beat Memphis.
Do not say that. Ken Pom says we're going to lose.
Listen, Ken Pom can suck my dick.
Ken Pom can butter my cheese.
All right, so I'm looking at the calendar right now, right? So we have Memphis on Tuesday night. Probably, yep. Hopefully, yep. You've heard this podcast by then. Let's say UConn wins. We're all going to be like insane going into the Nova game. We're going to all start being like how I've already admitted that I will irrationally think UConn's going to beat Villanova, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put a marker down.
And I'm with you.
That. So then there's Villanova, SMU at Gamble, at Temple. And then we'll record another podcast that Monday.
Wait, you know how we could guarantee that UConn will beat both Memphis and Villanova?
What's that, Russ?
Is that if I declare right now on this podcast that if UConn beats both Memphis and Villanova, I'll get a tattoo of Jonathan.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm into this. All right. I like it.
We'll put it on the company card even. It's a write-off.
Yeah, put it on the company card. If UConn wins both those games, I will do that.
Oh, man. Wow, this is... The podcast just got
Jonathan.
Fucking content. That is content,
Russ. Which Jonathan?
Which
Sad
Jonathan?
John? Are we going Derp John? Current John? Like, what?
I will let Twitter book.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
Oh, no, Russ. Twitter
it has to be
We're
going to
give you Quaaludes, John, Russ. You're going to get Quaaludes, John. Just know that. Know that.
Russ, haven't you learned your lesson to not let Twitter do anything?
The answer is Sad John, obviously. Obviously you get
because
Sad John.
All of my mistakes on Twitter have been my own doing.
Or Goofy John. Sad John or Goofy John. Either one is great.
Musket Husky.
Oh, I would love Musket. I might get that anyway.
All right. If Jalen Adams gets a triple double in the Villanova game, I feel like that has to be lower back.
Tramp stamp. 100%. Yes.
If.
Yep.
If Josh Carlton
leads the team in points, it's got to be on your face.
If Josh Carlton gets a double double, we're talking full back, shoulder blade to shoulder blade.
Like a Yakuza tattoo.
If David Nora scores more than 3 points, literally you just become the tattoo. Like, you become the dog.
Antoine Anderson is selected in the NBA draft.
Antoine Anderson is shooting 16.7% in conference play. That's good.
If Antoine Anderson gets a triple-double, I will personally remove all of my teeth on live video.
That sounds fucking horrible. I don't want to watch
you
that.
Up Jay Timothy's is paying for that. You'd be like, yeah, I'm going to take his teeth out.
Antoine Anderson has not made a three in conference play. He's 0 for 9.
Pretty amazing that he averaged double figures.
He has made more free throws than Terry Larrier.
So do we want to tell the people about our plan to live pod the Nova game?
Sure.
We should, because I want to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, our position is to just say it out loud in the pod, so that way we're held accountable.
We're going to try. It might not work because, you know, sometimes the shit we try doesn't work, but we're going to try stream this
Google Hangout,
this pod, so that during the Nova game, I don't know, we might interact with you. It's hard to say.
We probably, you guys suck. We probably won't.
We'll just talk to each other.
We'll talk to each other.
I will be covering the game for Russell Steinberg's dimeback.com.
But the rest of us will be
here. So I look forward to you all living the technological life on the other end. I will be in the XL Center, so I will not have internet access. But
nope. Russ will be in his gorilla onesie.
I will be. And I will be wearing the Russ phones.
It's going to be lit.
Excellent. Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Hang out with us.
Do you guys know that Jalen Adams is now leading the team in all of the main categories? Jalen Adams is leading, he's leading the team in points. He's leading the team in rebounding. He's leading the team in assists. He's leading the team in steals. He's leading the team in
turnovers.
What about
blocks?
Blocks is Isaiah Whaley, 1.1. Okay. Adams is seventh. Ahead of noted actual forwards, Eric Cobb, Tyler Pollard, Quentin Williams.
Probably not good.
Not great. Not great.
Oh, there's someone at the door. I'll be right back. I gotta see who this is. It's weird. This always happens.
He actually knocked.
Hello.
You're walking.
Well, if it isn't my good friend at the Dimebat podcast.
My gosh, it's David Benedict Cumberbatch. David, how are you?
Good evening to all of you. It's so wonderful to be here again.
I like how you've returned from your 7-day vision quest to watch cricket.
I've been in Australia watching the glorious Ashes test, my beloved England, just embarrassing fashion. Much like many of the UConn teams. But now I'm back, and UConn is not terrible, and tickets are even the tiniest chimney sweep can afford them.
How were the crumpets in Australia?
They were not good. They're made with kangaroo, so it's quite a different experience.
Oh no!
You know, all of the greats of English cricket were there. There was Richard Braddockson, Braddock Richardson, Rich Brad Adrickson, and John Rich Braddockson, and beloved England. One day they'll reclaim the Ashes, but not this year.
So you're saying that kangaroo crumpets aren't any good?
No, they were a little gamey.
Well, can you suggest any other snacks that we might like?
I could, and it comes straight from our friends over at J. Timothy's Tavern.
Oh, that's much more convenient than Australia.
No, there's, to my knowledge, there's no kangaroo. To my knowledge, I don't
yet
know.
They say
these things on the menu, and you never know. But today I will tell you about the chicken pot pie.
Oh,
of course,
I've actually had that there. It's very good.
You can give you a review.
We don't let him talk during this segment.
No, this isn't my segment. I'm just saying I had it before. You could go.
Okay, well, thank you. The chicken pot pie comes with a white meat chicken, potatoes, and vegetables topped with golden brown pastry for just $18.50. And, of course, us Englishmen, we eat meat pies at all of the footy. And Russ says it's good, so I'm going with it.
Great. Russ, thank you.
Apparently, the chicken pot pie got some love. It was featured on the Travel Channel's Food Paradise.
I'm bleeping it. Travel Channel does not sponsor this podcast. I'm bleeping it.
But we do love J Tim's, and they love J Tim's because they just appeared on an episode, and that was apparently one of the dishes.
Congrats to J Timothy's on having two prominent media appearances this week between the Travel Channel and also this podcast.
Thank you, David.
Always a pleasure. Please, everyone, come out to the Villanova game at 7:30 a.m. Because of the queues. The queues will be lining up throughout the day. And be sure to buy football tickets.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
So we're going to talk about football coaches?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Let's do that quick.
Rhett Lashley is out. Gone
Fuck
to
him.
SMU. Yep, definitely.
Fuck that guy.
Fuck him.
And the entire state of Arkansas. Frankly,
friendship ended with Rhett Lashley. Now John Dunn is my new friend.
Friendship begun with yes.
I approve of the poetic pun opportunities with John Dunn as our coach. I expect Twitter to like get on that shit.
Unbearable.
It's gonna be great.
Fortunately,
just lean into it, Russ.
Our readers have no idea who John Dunn is.
Yeah, but they got Google.
Do they?
Do they? They've got Bing.
Typing his name.
Meech, what do you make of the hire?
It's hard to get excited about it. We have really no draw on it. Seems to be someone Edsel trusts. So if you think Edsel's got a good history of hiring coordinators, and he does, then you certainly you should give him a chance. I really hope they don't go away from a lot of the things that Lashley was putting in, because I think it was working and it could work for this personnel. They're apparently going to keep the no huddle, which I think is good.
I think they brought him in because he'll run the offense they want.
Could be.
They got onto it for 1 year. The result was positive. They're going to keep doing it.
It's going to be impossible to judge until at least the spring game when we get to actually see it. And, you know,
I've already made my judgment, and it's going to happen.
I also feel like Benedict has been really involved, at least at the coordinator level, for these hires the last couple of years. Obviously, with Lashley and Jerry Kill, he wanted to bring on to Diaco's staff. So I assume he was really involved in this one. And he seems to get that the team needs to play that up-tempo pace.
The other thing with the hire, aside from the offense design and play calling, you know, he was the recruiting coordinator at Maryland under Edsel.
Is that good or bad?
He also took players while he was at Maryland.
Like guy who scored that touchdown yesterday, Stephon Diggs. He was a Edsel recruit.
And he's
brought
magic.
Brought in classes that were top 50, and like that's not going to happen here. But if he can get UConn into the middle of the pack for the AAC, or at least get a few guys who can, you know, be playmakers early, then can't hate it.
Is there anyone out there that you can think of off the top of your head that would have gotten you excited?
I don't know if I have a specific. No, I would have quit and thrust out a window if they had hired Dan Orlovsky.
I was really hoping that Dan would be the QB coach. I wanted him
as QB.
Yeah.
As QB coach, it would have been great. As an offensive coordinator who has never been a coach and retired from playing 4 months ago, or 9 months ago, whatever it was, yeah, that would have been stupid. I didn't really have a name, but like I might have been looking towards the MAC or, you know, a high-level FCS coordinator. Ultimately, you know, I have a little bit of faith in Edsel that he knows what he's doing hiring-wise.
Like, yeah. He doesn't have coordinator experience, but he's coached offenses in a number of places, including, you know, working with the Chicago Bears. So it's not like he has no experience or anything. It's just, it's hard to know exactly what you're getting with somebody whose resume isn't like fully fleshed out yet, but I'm kind of in the like, all right, I'm gonna let Edsel have this one. And from based on the quote that he gave to the Current, it sounds like they are going to run, if not the same offense, certainly a very similar one. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Maybe, you know, maybe he's picked a gem and it's going to be great. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, so we'll see how much he gets paid when he leaves to go be the coordinator at Houston next year.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Great.
We're kind of dancing over the elephant in the room, which was it's a pretty bad sign, right? That Rhett Lashley left to go to a conference school in the exact same job title.
Yeah, it's not a good look in any way. The reasons he left are plausible enough. Apparently his wife hated Connecticut because the people were too Connecticut-y old, and he wanted to be closer to where he lived in the South or whatever. Really does look like UConn is a small-time school that can't pay its assistants and or is hopeless enough that anyone good would not want to stay here more than 12 months. So that is...
I'm picturing Lashley commuting from Arkansas on one of those fan boats. Yeah.
It's like an over 5-hour drive from where he's from in Arkansas to SMU.
I feel
like
we
five
can just,
and a half hours.
We can just establish like a baseline rule that we should not hire anyone to work at the University of Connecticut other than Ricky Moore, who was born south of like Virginia. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Unless they actually attended UConn. You can have dispensation if you have a degree of some variety from the University of
True.
Connecticut.
True.
Other than that...
You have to move to Connecticut and prove your worth by earning your degree.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So you wouldn't hire Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Okay. Nice. Good.
Good job. That was great.
That's like a nice
really, thing. Really that's quick a thing button, yeah. Before we go. It'll take like 2 seconds. Should UConn drop football and go to the Big East?
Yes.
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 Probably.
All right. Thanks for listening to that podcast. See y'all next time. Oh, wait. I forgot. Please? So Alex, who's not on this podcast because he's, you know, hanging out with his wife.
Wow.
Just letting that sit in the world for a minute. He plays in a band called Tetramer. They do the intro music for this podcast, and they just put out a new record this week called Death of Karma. So at the end of this podcast, we're going to play in full their first single, which is called Death of Karma. So enjoy that right now.